Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Ahimsa in Speech and Guru Puja, and then Mega Trends Guru Puja, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
This morning, start out on Ahimsa. Ahimsa, as we all know, is a central principle of Hinduism. It's first in our list of yamas or restraints, so it shows must be important to be first. And of course, all of us here are very good at not inflicting violence in a physical way. We don't go around hitting people. We've got that under control. We have no deeds of violence that we're participating in. However, as you'll recall, the definition of ahimsa is not harming others in thought, word, and deed. It's not just a matter of deed. Also, our thoughts and our words need to be in alignment with the principle of ahimsa. So this morning I thought we could look at words, specifically words that hurt. Let's take first the interesting area of joking and teasing, something that happens a lot. We say things to one another in the spirit of making a joke, teasing someone. We're trying to produce humor, be funny, cause laughter, and therefore it's supposed to be okay. So here's some common examples. Someone has a special privilege or position that we don't. So something that might be said could go like, "He got to skip the work today that we did. You really got it easy." We're just joking, right? To someone who is a bit overweight, "He certainly likes those desserts." Someone speaks English with a slight foreign accent, so you repeat back the mispronunciation and laugh. Someone has difficulty, such as in multiplication. When they're having trouble making a calculation, you make fun of them. So the rationale is, well, I'm just joking. I'm just trying to make someone laugh. Must be okay. But if we look at it more carefully, we'll see that our words are harming someone, either in a small way or a large way. We're not helping them. We're harming them with our words. Our words are himsa in these cases. So how can we tell? What kind of guideline do we have regarding our speech to see if it's in a line with the principle, see if it's in alignment with the principle of ahimsa? Well, Gurudev has given us a very wonderful guideline. Speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary. So it's a fourfold test. True, kind, helpful, and necessary. So I remember long ago when some of the Shishya first encountered this principle, okay, true, kind, helpful, and necessary. Well, almost nothing's necessary, so that means I don't have to speak. Well, that wasn't exactly the right interpretation, because social situations do require us to do otherwise than remain silent. So that hasn't happened anymore. So in terms of joking and teasing, the first test to apply is it helpful? In other words, are we trying to help this person? in some way? Are we trying to help this person do better, improve? Are we concerned about this person's well-being and we want to see them improve, do better in some way, in an outer way, in an inner way, in a spiritual way? In some way, what we're saying is designed to help them. So let's look at our four examples again and see if any of them pass the helpful test. Someone has a special privilege or position that we don't. So we say, he got to skip the work today that we did. You really got it easy. We're not trying to help them at all. We're kind of jealous. Someone who is a bit overweight, he certainly likes those desserts. That's not helping the person lose weight. Someone speaks English with a slight foreign accent. You repeat back his mispronunciation and laugh. That's not helping him learn not to mispronounce the word. Someone has difficulty in multiplication. When they're having trouble making a calculation, you make fun of them. That's not helping them multiply better. So all four certainly fail the helpful test. Next test is the kind test. So let's take the example of someone who is overweight, who's a friend or a family member, and we're genuinely concerned that they're overweight. We would hope that they could lose weight. So, if we simply say, you're very fat, no, we're being true, and we're being helpful, but we failed the kind test, right? Depending on their nature, it could really hurt them. So it's not enough just to be helpful in intent. We also have to be kind. We have to figure out how to say this in a way that won't upset someone. How can we help them and be kind at the same time? So we could rephrase it, such as, you know, I was on the web the other day and I found a chart you might find useful on height, weight, and age. That's being kind. That's much better than saying they're too fat. Gossip. Talking about the details of others' personal lives when they are not present, simply for the delight of creating and watching our own television soap opera, so to speak. Might even be better than a soap opera. We don't even need to watch TV. We're having so much fun gossiping about the lives of others that we know. So, why are we doing it? We're doing it for our own enjoyment, right? We're not doing it to help the person we're gossiping about. Those who are participating in it are having entertainment, just like watching TV, except they're using someone else's life to talk about. So Gurudeva speaks quite strongly against this and uses the test of necessary. Here's what he says. So strong, I wouldn't even want to say it. Goodness. Here it comes. You ready? Look out. Here comes Gurudeva. Backbiting and hurtful gossip are the dissipation of the creative spiritual force. Gossip invokes the Asuric beings. On the lower astral plane and makes new karmas for the gossiper, who will be gossiped about in the future when the karmas return. When you defile others mentally and verbally through backbiting gossip about the happenings in their lives, you are hurting them. You are actually making it difficult for them to even persist where they are. They sense, they feel the ugliness that you are projecting toward them. Strong statement. And it makes us reflect on thoughts. Sometimes we don't think about it. You know, we have an action, we have a word, and we have a thought. So if we say something to someone, clearly it's influencing them, right? They're hearing us. But when we're just talking about them when they're not present, they're not even hearing it. So how can it be harming them? Because thoughts are objects. And when we talk about someone, We're sending thoughts to them, which are influencing their aura. And even if they don't see the thoughts, it upsets them if they're negative, critical thoughts. So we're harming them with our thoughts if they're negative and critical, if they're not positive. So that's what Gurudev is pointing out there. Gossiping about your husband, a favorite sport of some. Husband goes off to work, and before you know it, the wife jumps on the phone or jumps on the internet, starts talking about her husband's personal life with other wives. Gossiping about the husband in a critical way. It's a common practice. And the wives are being totally unsupportive in this way. Guru David says, working and plotting against the husband, making it hard for the husband to be successful. So this gets into the area of, is it necessary? And as an analogy, imagine the husband, if he takes all the money that's supposed to pay the mortgage and goes out and buys unnecessary items and comes back and gives them to the family. And what's the wife going to think? The husband has wasted important resources of the family. Here he's taken the money that's supposed to pay the mortgage and spend it on things that we really don't need. Of course, that hurts the family if that were to happen. But the wife who participates in significant gossiping is taking the energy, this is a point Gurudeva makes, taking the vital spiritual energy of the family and dissipating it. Just like the analogy of the husband spending money, the wife is dissipating energy, making it harder for the husband to be successful because the shakti is diminished, the power of the family is lessened by the practice of gossiping. So gossiping, of course, fails the three tests of kind, helpful, and necessary. Fails all three. So to be fair, we need to talk about the husbands too. Husbands don't gossip, but they tease their wives. They're critical of their wives for teasing them about shortcomings. So the husband is constantly harping on certain shortcomings, and the wife, the way she looks, how much she does at home, the housework, the cooking, whatever, if he's constantly teasing about things, his wife can't be happy. It impacts her, lessens her happiness. So the husband needs to restrain himself too and control his speech. Last but not least, backbiting. Someone leaves the room and before you know it, we're talking about everything he did wrong, all his faults. Backbiting. It's a strong human trait. It's in the Tirukkural too, which I'll read in a minute. It's so much easier to find and talk about the faults in others than it is to look at our own faults, because if we look at our own faults, we'll realize we should change them. So it's like we're looking the wrong direction on purpose. The part of the mind that sees faults, we have it pointed the wrong way. It's pointed out instead of in. And it's so busy looking outside and seeing the faults in others and talking about them to other people that we don't have any time to look inside, see our own faults, and correct them. Human nature. But part of human nature, we want to overcome. So the Quran says, if men perceived their own faults as they do the faults of others, could misfortune ever come to them? Obviously not, because they're so aware of themselves and what they're doing. Again, the Quran, only because she weighs duty well does earth bear the weight of those who wait for a man's departure to defame him. So if earth wasn't a little more dutiful, she'd just throw us off. So, when it comes to faults, a good rule of thumb is, unless we're responsible for someone, like a parent is to a child, or supervisor is to his staff, in those situations, we're responsible for pointing out faults in others and helping them correct them. But unless it's a situation like that, we should let other people correct their own faults. We've got enough faults in ourselves if we stop looking at others' faults, and we'll see them and focus our energy on correcting them. So in summary, remember the test, speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary. Shambhuvananda Swami has been working with the Venkateshwaran Temple in Pittsburgh for an activity that's occurring in June. They're having a educational event coordinated by the educational committee of the temple. The theme of the event is Hinduism, past, present, and future. So they've invited me to be one of the speakers. So they wanted to know the title of the talk. That's planning ahead, right? What's the title of the talk you're giving in June? I don't even know the title of the talk I'm giving on Sun 1. Let alone the title of the talk in June. Then they want a 10-page or less write-up on the talk by April 10th. Oh. So, thinking of a title, so I thought, well, why not do something challenging, and chose as the title Hindu Megatrends. Yeah, Hindu Megatrends. Why not? So, we're asking for help. Help. Ideas. Help in the form of ideas. Your thoughts on what significant megatrends are in Hinduism, say over the next 10 years, 20 years. What do we see happening? What does the future hold? So we're going to set up an email so we can get in email ideas. And Arumugha Swami, we want to put out a request on HPI requesting ideas. Then we'll set up the email account before we do that. But something like megatrends@hindu.org, we'll set that up so that emails go to one location and don't get mixed up with anything else. So it's very interesting to think about the future and want to get ideas from different people and try and develop something nice, as well as encourage those who attend the event, at the event, to express ideas and submit ideas afterwards too, what they think. And then we can compile all of these ideas and create an article in Hinduism Today. A very interesting article, Hindu Megatrends. For example, just to get you thinking about it, there will be a megatrend of Hindus outside of India marrying non-Hindus. That's what happens, but it just takes a few generations. So what happens in that instance? Is the non-Hindu spouse going to become a Hindu? Is the Hindu spouse going to become a non-Hindu? Is the Hindu community, how is it going to react to mixed marriages? A very interesting subject to think about. But it's definitely going to occur. It always happens in the diaspora. So that's Hindu Megatrends. You can get your think tank turned on, send in some ideas, and come up with a very interesting talk and an article for Hinduism Today. Tomorrow is our monthly Chitra Puja for Gurudeva. So in thinking of that, I was thinking about Gurudeva and the future. Gurudeva's appeared to a number of monks in their dreams and talked about a glorious future. Don't think about the past, don't be sad in the present, but let's think about the future. It's going to be quite wonderful, and let's create it together. So there was a very nice event recently which gives us a sense of the future. We had a family of 12, originally from Guyana, who now in New York, who came up three generations, and got off their cruise ship for a few hours, all of them dressed impeccably in Hindu clothing, even the youngest, and came up and spent a few hours here, worshipped in the temple, sang their hearts out, went out to Erevan and so forth, and were very uplifted by their stay. And in departing, they were very generous. They gave $9,000 to the Erevan Building Fund. But most interestingly, they enjoyed their visit so much that they said, well, next time we come back, we're going to charter a plane and bring a group of pilgrims here. This is such a wonderful spot. So it's just a sign of the future that what we have here is so unique, such a wonderful vibration, such a beautiful setting, such a religious adinam, such devout devotees, that it really impresses sincere pilgrims, and they want to come back. They feel this is something very, very special, particularly something special outside of, say, India. You know, where on the mainland do you find what we have here? Nowhere. So anyway, that just was, to me, was a tangible event reflecting Gurudeva's statements in dreams about a glorious future, that they're going to come back. If they feel that way, how many others will feel the same way? And imagine when Erevan is functioning, what will be the volume of sincere pilgrims coming? It could be quite substantial. Of course, we're not measuring success by quantity, but that's part of the future. It's more the quality that I'm referring to, how struck they were, how respectful, and how much they got out of their visit here. Plus, how uplifted we were by their presence. They were so beautifully dressed, so devotional, such sincere pilgrims. It was a pleasure to host them. So there's some useful quotes in the Saivite Shastras that refer to Yogaswami, but we can now apply them to Gurudeva as well. They describe where Yogaswami is in the inner worlds and how he comes to pujas that are conducted in his name. So it all applies to Gurudeva at this point. So to quote, "There are other rooms in the inner mind as well, one governing each of the four winds and another for your guru, in which his guru lives." So I imagine that's where he is right now. Probably redecorated, knowing Gurudeva. Went shopping at Walmart and redecorated. So, these rooms of which we speak are like caverns of the mind. In them we do our work, walk around as you do. We bring everything to us rather than go out to it, like you do with television and radio. When you close your eyes, you live inside your head and think. This is similar to these thought caverns in the inner mind. They can't be created by us. They can be created by us in any way, simple or extremely complex, as you build the insides of your house in the outer mind. Your master's Guruji lives in a simple cavern, as that was his association with the inside of a small room in his ashram in Sri Lanka. He could make it larger with but a twinkling of the eye, but he sits there in deep samadhi, radiating darshan to the sanctified places that do puja in his name. When a puja is conducted in his name, his wall opens up, and he is at the puja. He does not go to it. It comes to him. If the vibration of the puja penetrates deep enough. So I put that last phrase there in bold. If the vibration of the puja penetrates deep enough. So it's not automatic. It's like we were talking about temple worship sometime in the last few phases. And if you go to the temple and your mind's on something else, you don't get the same benefits as if you're thinking about your worship. And particularly if you prepare for it in advance, you get even more benefits. This is the same idea, but it applies to those conducting the puja, that they need to be focused on what they're doing. If you're just sitting there and conducting puja to Gurudeva and you're thinking about something else, it doesn't necessarily go deep enough. Those doing the pujas need to be thinking about Gurudeva and be attuned to his vibration enough for this process to work. But it is a very interesting idea that Gurudeva comes to the puja by the puja coming to him. It's on reverse.